Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. You've got the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Well, he covers the NBA for Bleacher Report, and he's a hell of a follow on Twitter, at Hyken on Twitter. Sean Hyken joining us from lovely Chicago, I believe. Are you in the Windy City?
I am. How are you doing, well, John?
Set the scene for us. Just give us some flavor of Chicago.
The weather has been phenomenal, actually, since I've been out here. I have a lot of friends out here still because I lived out here for a number of years and used to cover the Bulls. And everybody's telling me that I just picked the absolute best week to be out here. And obviously, this is the week that the entire NBA is just sort of descending on the city because the draft lottery is tonight and then the combine is later this week. So it's just one of those events that every, GM, agent, scout, every NBA personnel is all here. Joe Cronin, I know, is here. I'm assuming the rest of the Blazers front office, probably Chauncey Billups, are also here. Damian Lillard is, as it's been announced, he's going to be representing the Blazers on stage for the draft lottery in a couple of hours when they find out what their pick is going to be. So it's a pretty pivotal day for the future of the Blazers organization.
Give me an idea. I was asking this in the opening segment. What is a win today for the Blazers? In your mind, where does the draft fall off is, I guess, what I'm asking you. The Blazers, the Blazers needs as well as anybody. What's a win for the Blazers?
I mean, a win would be moving up into the top four. They have a 9% chance at the number one overall pick because they have the sixth best lottery odds. But they have a 37.2% chance of moving up into the top four, which is the fourth they draw the lottery balls for. And I'd be lying to you if I said that I was the biggest expert on the draft and on college basketball. I haven't really watched enough of any of these guys to have, a strong opinion about who they should take or who they shouldn't take or which of them would be the best fit. But if you move up into the top four, I think that opens a lot of things up, not just for whether, because it seems like a consensus top three guys are Chet Holmgren, the center out of Gonzaga, and then Jabari Smith out of Auburn and Paolo Banchero out of Duke. You could take one of those three, and it seems like, from what I've read and from people that I've talked to, it seems like all three of them are guys who are ready to contribute right now and aren't, multi-year projects that they would have to develop while they're still trying to win now with Dame. But if you get a pick in the top four, that also opens up potentially a lot of different stuff you could do as far as what kind of trades you can make. It gives you kind of, other conversations you can get into. So moving up into the top four and just really, even if they stay at six, they're fine. It seems like, from people I talked to, this draft is not like, this isn't like one of those drafts where there's like two guys and then everybody, and then a huge drop off. It seems like there's a lot of depth in the later lottery in this draft. So I think they're in an okay spot with it no matter what, but you would like to see them move up to the top four.
I'm looking at the playoffs. I'm looking at these final four teams, and I'm seeing, teams that have depth. They've got stars. They're well coached. I mean, it's not accidental. When you view the Blazers through that prism, Sean, how far away do they feel from you, to you from maybe getting to a conference finals again?
They need a lot more wing depth. They need to get better defensively, and the big thing that's really going to swing what happens with the franchise the next few years is how healthy Dame is, because this year they shut him down in January with the ab thing, and he says he's been dealing with that for several years, which is amazing that he was playing at the level he was playing at the last few seasons while he was dealing with that. If this was really bothering him that much, and he has said in the past that when people see me next year, they're going to realize how hurt I was because I'm going to come back better than ever. And so if that's true, we've seen Dame get some pretty mediocre teams a lot further than they should have gotten over the years. But if they can get some more wing depth, I heard Jeremy Grant was a name that was thrown out there a lot around the trade deadline. I think that's somebody they're still going to be in on. OG Anunoby in Toronto is somebody else that I think they could look at if there's some sort of a logjam in Toronto and they view him as somebody who's expendable. So those are, I think, the kind of players that they need to get more of in order to, like, they have scoring with Dame, they have scoring with Anthony Simons. The Josh Hart, you've heard Joe Cronin talk about this, that the Josh Hart type of players are the kinds of guys that he and Chauncey want to bring in, guys who are two-way guys and can defend and, are going to play hard on that end. And I think that's the offense is there. They need to get better defensively and they need to get better personnel defensively. And I think that's when you look at whether, all the teams that are left, whether it's, Golden State having a guy like Draymond Green and like a Dorian Finney-Smith in Dallas, and then obviously Boston and Miami both have incredible defenses. That's what these teams are all kind of built on, as well as having a couple of transcendent offensive players. And, the Blazers have one of those in Dame, but the defense is where they need to improve if they ever want to be on that trajectory to be in this conversation in future years.
I still can't tell, and this is no knock on Chauncey Billups, I just haven't seen enough, maybe, or seen enough of them in games that matter to know if Chauncey Billups is the coach that could take them into the playoffs again in a couple seasons, or maybe advance in the playoffs. We're looking at Ime Udoka in Boston, Eric Spoelstra in Miami, guys with Portland ties, and I think, I'm going, okay, why weren't they interviewing Ime? When you see Chauncey Billups, what did you see from him in the last year, Sean, and is he the kind of coach that you think could grow into the guy that could take them deeper into the playoffs, or do you see it or not, I guess?
I think it's so hard to judge him one way or the other, whether he's a good coach or a bad coach at this point, because we just saw so little of most of the season, especially they shut Dame down and then they trade everybody at the deadline. He was basically coaching D-leaguers who aren't going to be on the team next year for most of the year. And the point of I'm not really going to be judging a coach too harshly on stuff when they were actively trying to lose games as an organization for like half the season. So from that standpoint, but also when, you bring up Ime Udoka, who is getting a ton of credit right now for the job, and deservedly so, for the way that he's been able to turn the Celtics around after a rough start. But you look at the beginning of the season where the Celtics got off to a really bad start and he was kind of doing some of the same stuff that Chauncey was doing early on in the season, where he was like calling out guys' effort in post game press conferences and saying that guys aren't bought in and guys are playing selfish. A lot of the same stuff that we were hearing from Chauncey here in Portland before, Neil got fired and the focus of the season changed. And so you saw that Udoka kind of had a rough start, but then as the season went along, the main guys, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, kind of started to buy in a little bit more to what he was doing. I think that Chauncey has, having talked to him, throughout the season and gotten to know him and just gotten to know him and his personality and his temperament, I think he has the personality to be a very good head coach. He's a very, straightforward guy. He's very good at kind of meeting people where they are and just, being able to talk to people and just being able to relate to people. I think that a lot of the personality stuff and the intangible stuff is there. And he's also, I think he also did not come in, even as much of a track record as he had as a player and as somebody who was really respected, he did not come into this. And he was very open about this with us in the media, all the time throughout the season. He said that, this year was a developmental year for the players, but it was also a developmental year for him as a head coach. And he's very open about, I still have to learn. I still have to get better at this. I still have to figure out what works and what doesn't work. And I could just tell from, the beginning of the season when they were getting blown out and, guys were, he was calling out guys' effort. And you could tell that, he was miserable coaching a team that was expected to be in the playoff because the person that put the roster together at the time was the only one that thought that roster was a playoff team, and he kind of had to live with the results of that. And you could tell he was kind of miserable. And then once, in a weird way, obviously when you're a coach, especially you're trying to make your mark, you don't like losing games. But once they shifted what they were doing with the season, when they shut Dame down and when they traded CJ and Covington and Norm Powell, and it became entirely a developmental thing, I could just tell the difference in him. Just, he was having so much more fun just on a day-to-day basis, not having to worry about wins and losses, and being able to just, teach concepts and principles to some of the younger guys. I think, and it seemed like guys really responded to that. I've not heard anything but positive stuff from players about whether, you know, they like him personally and they respect him. I think that there is optimism that he is going to end up being a good coach. Kind of hard to really judge off of this season, given how sideways everything went for stuff that was kind of out of his control.
We're talking to Sean Hyken, Bleacher Report, covers the NBA. The Damian Lillard's future in Portland, you know, we talk about him often as it's a foregone conclusion that he's going to be part of this roster. How unstable does that situation feel to you?
I think that what happened in December makes it a lot more likely that he sticks around long term. I can tell you that ever since that happened, ever since the, you know, Joe Cronin became the interim general manager, and obviously now he's the full-time general manager, nearly every time I was at a game or a practice, especially after they shut Dame down for the season with the ab injury, I would see Dame and Joe sitting on the baseline just talking for like 30 or 45 minutes at a time, and just like, it was very obvious that they talk all the time. They communicate all the time. Dame is totally bought. I mean, you see he's representing the team at the lottery. Like, if he was a guy who was like looking at maybe asking for a trade, which has been, you know, out in the ether for however many years that it's been, just because there always has to be somebody, you know, a star in a small market that people think is going to ask for a trade. If he was going to do that, I don't think he would be here representing the team at the lottery. And also, he's about to get this extension in the summer, so I don't see the situation changing anytime soon. I think he's going to be here for at least the foreseeable future.
Can the Blazers, with Anthony Simons, Dame, Yusuf Nurkic possibly, you know, does the timeline work, Sean? Like, when you talk about the window to win for Damian Lillard's career, and, you know, you're potentially adding a 20-year-old kid to the mix, you know, maybe even projecting it after tonight in the draft lottery, does the timing work for you?
That's why what you just said with, you know, having those three guys who are kind of win-now players and then adding a 20-year-old to the mix, that's also part of why I think it's very well within the realm of possibility that they don't end up keeping the pick that they get tonight in the lottery. I mean, they had kind of a setback with their ability to do different things when New Orleans made the playoffs and they didn't get that second lottery pick that I think they were counting on from the CJ trade. But if this pick, whether it moves into the top four, if it moves into the top four, that opens up a lot more stuff as far as like trade conversations they could get into. Like, you know, what if the Lakers decide to trade Anthony Davis? What if Joel Embiid asks? This is all like totally outlandish stuff. Like, what if Joel Embiid looks at this whole Philly situation, which is pretty messy right now? And like, I don't know. Like, if you have a pick that's that high, like, you can get into those conversations. And even if it goes, you know, stays at six or, you know, even moves back a little bit, this situation in Phoenix with DeAndre Ayton is kind of interesting, where like, if you have a, you know, lottery pick and it seems clear that like that situation is headed for a breakup, you can maybe get in the mix there too. Like, I would say that it's a pretty good chance. I don't want to put a percentage on it, but
right,
I think just because of the window, because they're trying to win now while Dame is still in his prime and while he's still here and still bought in, I think that it's pretty possible that wherever their pick falls tonight, that they could not be drafting a player for themselves on draft night.
That's fascinating. Sean Hyken with us. Covers the NBA for Bleacher Report. Sean, Terry Stotts, his name has come up in a couple of different coaching searches, the Lakers, Charlotte, the latest. What's the right place for Terry Stotts in your mind?
If I were him, and I haven't talked to Terry in a while. We texted a little bit when he first got fired, but I haven't talked to him in a while. But if I were a head coach and I was looking at the current market, I don't want anything to do with that Lakers job. Like, as much as like there's the prestige of, oh, it's the Lakers and you get to coach LeBron James and, you know, all this, that is not a good job. You saw how they just did Frank Vogel when he won a championship with them. Then they basically fire him after the season. Like, I don't think Frank Vogel was the reason that a team where, you know, Anthony Davis wasn't healthy and Russell Westbrook was a terrible fit and the rest of their roster was all like just like LeBron's buddies who are all veterans who were past their prime. Like, Frank Vogel was not the reason that they didn't make the playoffs, and he had just won a title with them and they just pushed him out the door. So if you're a coach like, you know, Terry Stotts, who is you know, I don't think he really, like, he is not a championship-winning head coach, but I don't think he really has anything to prove as far as, you know, his reputation as a coach. He was here for 9 years in Portland where the teams were consistently very good, and he has, you know, the endorsement and the respect of Dame, who's one of the most respected guys in the league. If I were him, you know, he's in his 60s. I don't know if I'd want the stress of, like, you have, like, the Buses and the Rambuses and Phil Jackson pulling at you in one direction, trying to tell you what to do, and then you have LeBron and Clutch and, like, that whole operation pulling at you in the other direction, trying to tell you what to do and trying to get different guys straight. Like, if I'm a guy, if I had options, that Charlotte job where you can just go and coach LaMelo Ball, and if they make the playoffs, you get to take a lot of credit for LaMelo Ball having his best years. Like, that seems like the situation for me if I'm him. But I, like I said, I haven't talked to Terry in a little bit. I don't know what his priorities are right now, but that's where I would lean if I were him.
All right, big factors for the Blazers, you know, as you look at, you know, tonight, you know, we are obviously Blazer-centric here, but there are some other teams here. You know, when you look at the draft lottery, Sean, is there a team that has a shot, legit shot, maybe at the number one pick that you think is only one player away, or do you see problems when you see the teams with the worst records?
Detroit, I think, is really, really promising. You saw Cade Cunningham. Obviously, you know, he didn't win Rookie of the Year because, he, you know, I think he was out for the beginning of the season, and so he was kind of behind the eight ball on that whole race as competing with, like, Scottie Barnes and Evan Mobley. So maybe he didn't get the accolades, but he had a really phenomenal rookie season. I think he is a guy they can build around. I don't think Jeremy Grant is going to be there long term, but I think Dwayne Casey is a really good coach. I think that they have some other young guys like Isaiah Stewart and Sadiq Bey who made strides, and I think if they get one more, you know, high pick, I think they've really got something there to build. So, and, you know, Oklahoma City is also kind of interesting. Like, if they can ever get their guys on the floor at the same time, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Luke Dort, all those guys, Josh Giddey, the kid they drafted last year from Australia, is really interesting. And I know Sam Presti has been doing this for a couple of years, trying to get a high lottery pick. And, you know, if he can get, you know, that foundational guy, maybe they go in and try to sign some veterans and be competitive. Those are the teams that I would look at kind of in the short term as far as teams that maybe aren't going to be in the lottery for very long.
All right, before I cut you loose, who do you like in the East? Who do you like in the West?
Well, I was going to say I like Boston in the East, but you just see that Marcus Smart and Al Horford are both out for game one, so that doesn't seem great for them. I think I still lean Boston in that series, and this is going to sound crazy, I kind of like Dallas in the West. Like, I don't think anybody picked them against Phoenix. I certainly didn't. I thought that Phoenix was going to handle them, and then they beat Phoenix. And I just think that Luka is the – in 2022, obviously all respect to what, you know, Steph and Draymond and Clay and all those guys have done in their careers. I think in 2022, Luka is the best player in the series. I think you can hide him on Draymond defensively because Draymond doesn't really do much on offense. I think Steph hasn't been – he's still very good, but he hasn't been the same type of, you know, pull up from – just across half court and he can, you know, hit 10 threes in a row guy that he's been before. Klay Thompson has been up and down. I kind of feel like Dallas, this is just, and it's such a weird team because there's nothing about them scans like this is a title contender because it's really just Luka and a bunch of role players. But I kind of like how their run has gone so far, and I kind of think they're going to continue it.
Sean Hyken, I appreciate you. Follow him on Twitter, at Hyken. What's your prediction for tonight? Where the Blazers end up picking?
I think they move into the top four, but don't get number one.
There you go. I think a lot of Blazer fans would take that as a win.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens.
All right, Sean Hyken, there he is, Bleacher Report. Follow him on Twitter, at Hyken. He's a good read. He's got his finger on the pulse. He's been around a long time. He knows what's going on with the Blazers and other NBA teams. That's why we bring him on this show. I want you to leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth statewide.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Tonight at the NBA Draft Lottery, I want you to pay careful attention to the gentleman who is representing the New York Knicks. I wrote about him today, and you can read it at johnconzano.com. If you want to read me, that's where you got to read me now. Exclusively there. I nearly fell over when the Knicks announced that William Wesley will be representing them tonight at the draft lottery. He will be out there under the spotlight. You have heard about Worldwide Wes on this radio show because I've talked about Worldwide Wes over the years. I first met William Wesley about 20 years ago. I wrote about him for the first time in 2004 at the NBA Finals. I noticed in the run-up to the finals and over the years that William Wesley was around the arenas. Like one time, he was standing in an area where, you know, unless you're a media member or a team representative, you can't be there. And he had no credential on, and I saw the security guard walk up to William Wesley, and I thought, oh, he's about to get ejected. He's about to get told you have to get back into your seat or whatnot. Nope. The security guard came up and asked him for chapstick. Hey, you got any chapstick? And William Wesley pulled it out of his pocket and let the security guard use it. He walked around the arenas at that time as if he owned the places. He didn't wear a credential. He did not work in an official capacity for a team. He told me he was a mortgage broker. And yet he moved around effortlessly behind the scenes. He was like walking past security. And in the 2004 NBA Finals, it was the Lakers and Pistons playing in that series. I was there covering it. And William Wesley would go to the Laker locker room, and then he would go over to the Piston locker room, and, you know, he knew everybody. The next year, I noticed that William Wesley showed up at what was then called the Rose Garden Arena. I was in the Blazers locker room, and he walked in. And I'd only seen him in passing. He said hello, then he went over and he was talking to some of the Blazers players, and I looked at Derek Anderson, former Blazer, and he said, "That's Uncle Wes. Everybody knows Uncle Wes." Now, Derek Anderson was from Louisville, Kentucky, and William Wesley was from New Jersey, but had spent a lot of time at Louisville and the University of Louisville. Now, it wasn't clear to me at the time if William Wesley was working for a sneaker company, if he's working for an agent, but what was evident was that he was very connected and he was very influential. That same summer, 2004, I went to see Damon Stoudemire, the Blazers guard, in Houston. He was working out at a gym in Houston where a lot of the NBA players at the time would work out in the summers. John Lucas was running an open gym, and you'd get like TJ Ford of Texas who would show up, and Damon, who had a house in Houston, was working out there. And so I told Damon that I was working on a piece about William Wesley, and he told me, "Wes is running the NBA." Now, William Wesley lived in suburban Detroit. I went to his house the following summer of 2005. Spurs and Pistons were playing in the NBA Finals. So I happened to be in Detroit for the series. I believe it was Game 3 and Game 4 that was in Detroit. And I looked up William Wesley, did a records request, found where he lived. I went to his house. When I got to his house, because I'm going to write about him here, there's an Escalade with Ohio license plates sitting in the driveway. It belonged to LeBron James. Now, LeBron was inside the house, and he was playing video games in Wesley's living room. I asked William Wesley about it. He told me his whole story, or at least the version of the story that he wanted out there publicly. He told me, "Hey, I got my start in high school. I worked at a sneaker shop in New Jersey. In the early 1990s, he befriended some of the Chicago Bulls who were in town, and they were playing a game, either against New Jersey or New York, and they went to this sneaker shop that Wesley worked at, and you know, he very quickly gained access to Michael Jordan's inner circle. He became a trusted member of Jordan's entourage. He hung out with Jordan. He ran errands for Jordan. And he was in Chicago so often that he eventually got an apartment in Chicago. Now, I asked Scottie Pippen, who was with the Blazers at the time, "How did you meet William Wesley?" Because he knew him too. And Scottie Pippen said, "I can't remember where I met him." And now that is a familiar refrain from people who interact with William Wesley. Like, people are like, "Oh, he's just around." But during the 2005 NBA Finals, Pippen and Wesley were hanging out like they were buddies that went way back. Like, I was standing with Wesley during warm-ups, and Scottie Pippen walked up and said, "Hey, Wes, where are you going to be after the game?" And, like, Wesley was like, "Hey, I'll find you after the game. No big deal." Like, it was interesting to me that this figure was moving around the NBA world virtually unchecked. Like, everybody knew who he was, but nobody knew who he was at the same time. He was intentionally vague. He told me he wasn't on anybody's payroll, that he made his money refinancing homes. I did not believe him. But I did go to his house, and it was this sprawling, upscale suburban Detroit house that, you know, and he wore tailored suits and nice jewelry, and, you know, William Wesley was doing fine. I eventually, in reporting the piece, called Sonny Vaccaro, who is the longtime sneaker guy for Nike, Adidas, and Reebok, and Sonny told me, "Wes is the best since me." That was Sonny's quote. Now, Sonny told me he was just a more evolved version of himself, in that Sonny needed the limelight. Sonny liked to talk to reporters. Sonny wanted everybody to know his story. William Wesley didn't want anybody to know anything about him except the players that he was involved with. Now, you don't know this. I want you to go to johncanzano.com and check yourself on this, but you probably have seen William Wesley. I put several photographs of him with the piece today, and if you go to johncanzano.com, you'll see that. You know, he's with LeBron James in Cleveland. He's with Scottie Pippen in Chicago. He's behind the Kentucky bench when John Calipari was at Kentucky. He was behind the Memphis bench when Cal was at Memphis. Dallas Cowboys go to the playoffs. William Wesley's on the sideline, and he's standing with Jerry Jones. You know, there's photos of William Wesley with Ndamukong Suh, and remember when Ron Artest, the Malice at the Palace, had that, you know, scrapped with some unruly fans on that night in Detroit? William Wesley, he's the guy, if you watch the video of it, who ends up on the court beside Ron Artest, shielding him from people in the crowd. This whole thing, "I'm just a sneaker salesman," is a facade, and we all know it. But I also think William Wesley enjoyed being a mystery, and I think he liked that. And I think, you know, when Oregon got Malik Hairston, the McDonald's All-American from the state of Michigan back in the day, you know, everybody wondered why and how did Malik Hairston pick Oregon over Michigan? He was a Michigan kid. And, you know, he was the number one guard in the country that year. And it very quickly became evident to me that William Wesley played a role in that. William Wesley told me at the time that Malik Hairston picked Eugene because of 9/11. He said, "Terrorists, kids are worried about terrorists, and you go to a place like Eugene with all the trees," and I didn't buy it for a second. What I think happened was there was a transaction that happened. Kenny Payne ends up on Ernie Kent's staff as a Ducks assistant coach. Kenny Payne is one of William Wesley's best friends. I think the Malik Hairston-Kenny Payne thing may have been a package deal. Who knows? William Wesley told me it's the 6 degrees of separation. It's the Kevin Bacon game, right? I'm friendly, you're friendly, we get to know people pretty soon, everybody knows him. But I'm looking at William Wesley's history, and I'm looking at all the places he ended up and the things he knew, and I'm wondering if this is just a guy who was way ahead of his time in this name, image, likeness world that we're seeing now. Is it possible that William Wesley was working on behalf of agents, sneaker companies, and then ultimately prospects to try to get them placed in the NBA? I think it's probably more likely than not, and I wrote about it today. Now, I wrote a column in 2008 as the draft was approaching, about this time of year in 2008. I wrote a column about Malik Hairston. He had gone to Oregon. It had been a fairly underwhelming tenure in his 4 years at the University of Oregon. I mean, they won games, but it wasn't like getting to the Final Four of the national championship game with Malik Hairston there. And I wrote a column that wondered if Malik Hairston would even be drafted, because he seemed like a guy who was destined for Europe. And after I posted the column, my phone rang. William Wesley was on the phone. And he announced Malik's going to go to San Antonio in the second round. And he even said, "Do you want to bet on it?" Hairston was picked in the second round a couple of weeks later, number 48 overall by the Phoenix Suns. And I went, "Ha, he's wrong." Within minutes, though, it was announced that the San Antonio Spurs traded for the pick. And William Wesley texted me with, "Told ya." What I'm saying is the guy knows stuff and is connected in a way that I think is difficult for the rest of us to understand. Now, he has operated behind the scenes in the shadows for all this time. He eventually showed up at Creative Artists Agency as a consultant. That's Leon Rose's agency. He's an agent turned New York Knicks president. William Wesley is now a vice president and is in charge of basketball advising for the New York Knicks. He will be under the spotlight tonight as part of the NBA draft lottery. You're going to see him on your TV. This is the first time I've seen William Wesley, World Wide West, go public under the spotlight. And maybe the rest of the world won't notice it. They'll be focused on who gets the one pick, who gets the two pick, what's happening with the Blazers. But I'll be watching that 57-year-old NBA executive who started off as a sneaker salesman in New Jersey. That guy used to be happy in the shadows. Tonight, he's going to be out front under the spotlight. I'm fascinated by whether or not William Wesley all along was just ahead of his time. Name, image, likeness, and all. I want you to leave it here. Our big splash is coming up.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.